And if you wonder why I always say live at the top of my show, it's really just a nervous tic. It's the Mike Novak Show. It's not a DIY program, but more of a DIISOY. Do it in spite of yourself show, like singing along to the song. Go for it.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the man.
And welcome to the show, and thank you for taking time to be part of it, whatever time of the day it happens to be. As always, if you like what you hear, drop me a line at mike@mikenowak.net, mikenowak.net. I love hearing from you, and I love hearing, as I did this week, that folks are catching my show on a number of venues. The Green Divas Global Digital Network at gddradio.com. Also iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, SoundCloud, the GLN Radio Network, and of course, at mikenowak.net. The Mike Novak Show is also on Facebook and on Twitter. You can find me with the handle at Mike Now. Today's show starts in the middle of August, actually, when I was introduced to a group called Proviso Partners for Health. It's a coalition promoting health equality within the communities in Proviso, which is a township in Cook County, Illinois, where two high schools, Proviso East and Proviso West, are located. The goal of Proviso Partners is to prevent disease and promote wellness, and one of the ways they're attempting to do that is to get the high school students involved in something they call the Giving Garden, which is located on the grounds of a company called Reuse Depot in West Suburban Maywood, which provides quality, reusable building materials at fair prices. On a hot summer day, which I mentioned more than once during today's show because, well, I'm really a weenie when it comes to hot weather, a group of concerned students and citizens gathered for a Raise the Hoop Garden Festival, and at the Giving Garden, you could find raised gardens made of both traditional wooden frames and galvanized steel troughs, hoop houses, a cistern to collect rainwater, vegetables, perennials, and a lot of enthusiasm. I interviewed a number of folks who are making this happen, including landscape architect and educator Nathan Wright from nearby Triton College. I've known him for a number of years. I think he's a great guy. Lena Hatchett, Director of University and Community Partnerships at Loyola University Medical Center. Garden Coach Jennifer Bridgman from Grow You Organic. Mature Triton student Bill Greer, you'll figure out what that means when you listen to the show. And younger students Alexandria Willis and Sienna Talmadge, who were offering salsa that was made from freshly grown garden vegetables and herbs. I've learned that there's a profound misunderstanding about what access to healthy, fresh, affordable food in the suburbs really means. That's to say, it's not always available. To a certain extent, it depends on the suburbs and where they're located. As Lena Hatchett explains during our interview, people need to learn the lessons of empowerment, entrepreneurship, and political savvy, all of which lead to jobs, which lead to the ability to live healthy lives in a sustainable way. I'm not going to be able to name all of the groups that are involved in Proviso Partners for Health. There are 28 and counting, but here are a few. Proviso East and West High Schools, Triton College, University of Illinois Extension, Cook County, Reuse Depot, Quinn Community Center, the Mender Foundation, the Village of Maywood, State Representative Kathleen Willis, Proviso Leiden Council for Community Action, Neighborhood Association of Maywood, Good Earth Greenhouse, Greenheart Building, Grow You Organic, Twig Landscape Design, OBI Deconstruction, Suzanne Fairfax Media, District 89 School District of Maywood, Melrose Park and Broadview, Loyola Health System, Loyola University Chicago Stritch School of Medicine, and Niehoff School of Nursing, and there are more than that. Well, I hope you enjoy the show, and it happens right after this.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
You might not know it, but I write a column for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. And if you say, what's that got to do with me? It would be a good question. And the answer is that Chicagoland Gardening is just one of a number of great gardening magazines produced by State Gardening. They're the folks who write my checks. And they're the folks who publish magazines in 21 states, from Minnesota to Florida, from Pennsylvania to Oklahoma. That means that you can subscribe to Kentucky Gardener, but depending on what side of the river you're on, you might want a subscription to Indiana Gardener, or Ohio Gardener, or Tennessee Gardener, or Louisiana Gardener. I think maybe you're getting the picture. Wherever you live in the Midwest or the South, State by State Gardening has a magazine for you. And they feature articles by some of the leading garden experts in each state, including famous authors, nursery owners, state extension agents, master gardeners, and even me. Subscribe today by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600. You're listening to the Mike Novak Show. Let's head out to the Giving Garden in Maywood, Illinois, where I talk to landscape architect and educator Nathan Wright at the Raise the Hoop Garden Festival. Yeah. Let me set the scene here. Across the street from Proviso East High School, home of the Pirates, it says right there. Okay, it's one of the hottest days of the year. It's hot, it's muggy, it's the sun's beating down mercilessly, but and we're right next door to this place called Reuse Depot, Reusable Building Material Center in Maywood.
What we're wanting to develop, and this is going to take more work, but what we're wanting to develop is a real strong group of young people from the high school that'll come over and start taking ownership of this property and the plants, both the perennials and the vegetable gardens. And so they've formed a group now called the Planthropists. And so it's a combination of plants and philanthropists.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I like that.
So that's their name. And you'll see they may be walking around here with green. They have a green T-shirt, and it says Planthropist on it. And what we're also working to do is to develop more of an agricultural program inside, agricultural or horticultural program at the school.
So let me ask you about your connection to the high school, Proviso East and Proviso West, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The students who come from there, are they strictly volunteer or is this part of the curriculum?
Well, at the moment, this is a summer, basically like a summer job or summer training program for the students that was funded by the Walter S. Mander Foundation. So we have this network of teachers and whatnot that have referred us these different students. So we had about 22 students that applied for our summer job program here, where we had 12 slots. Mm-hmm. So we were able to pick some really great students. But we do have teachers in our network from both Proviso East and Proviso West, probably some other ones as well that I'm not as familiar with. Mm-hmm. Proviso West, we're working with a culinary teacher over there. Her name is Miss Martul. And here at Proviso East, we're working with the art teacher whose name is Ms. Laporte. We also have reached out to the science department.
Are you still in school yourself?
Yeah.
I like that. Miss Laporte, Miss Laporte.
Well, I don't know. Everybody is so proper around here that I try not to ruffle any feathers by calling people by the wrong names.
All right, let's back up a little bit. You got to explain who you are.
Oh, well, my name is Nathan Wright, and I have been helping with Triton's Sustainable Agriculture Program. And that's a new program started about 3 years, two or maybe 2 years ago. And it's a 2-year associate's degree in sustainable
Triton agriculture. Triton
College. Yes, Triton College, yes. And so I've been working over there with the department coordinator, whose name is Tom Elsley, and some of the other grant staff. Ben Newton in particular has been instrumental in getting the program going. And so we had a few grants that we were working on for a while.
You say you help with them. You're not on staff?
Well, I'm an adjunct faculty member at the moment. Yeah.
Well, that counts, doesn't it?
Yes, that does count.
And a landscape designer.
And a landscape designer.
In the Chicago area. Yes. Where do you base your operations?
Well, I'm based out of Oak Park. But what's been really helpful for me here at this project site is we also have set up a growing facility that where we're growing perennials for residential landscape design customers.
And that's the hoop house way in the back back there.
Yes, that's the little hoop house toward the back.
But was that... It's the only one that's actually got the fabric on it right now.
That's right.
So why did you start with the perennial hoop house?
Well, we started with that one because before the perennials were being grown in St. Charles, and then the person who was growing them announced this spring that he's retiring. So we had to move them ASAP. And so what happened is we were having a meeting to talk about the garden, and I said to my collaborators here, I said something like, I have to move all these perennials someplace and I don't know what to do with them. And they said, they looked at me like I was crazy because they're like, well, why don't you bring them here? And I was like, I hadn't even thought of that. I was looking for someplace, you know, further away perhaps.
But that actually, that brings up a really, really good point, because you've got a lot of garden beds here that are growing vegetables and some ornamentals.
Yeah.
But perennials is, and you and I chatted about this earlier, and I was making fun of you because you're a landscape designer and you deal with perennials and stuff that is pretty and has almost no purpose.
Yeah.
Especially if they're not native. You know, you look at them and you go, why are we, and then you come here and here you're helping people grow food and be sustainable. Doesn't that like smack you in the forehead every now and then?
It's funny, I don't really think of it that much. I mean, it is probably a very ironic, but I also feel, I actually was just meeting with a landscape architect, landscape design company from the North Shore, and I was saying, I think that what consumers are looking for these days is a way of giving back into to communities, perhaps, that are less served. And so I feel that there's actually some real value in me having the perennials here and then using it as an opportunity for the kids to learn how to take care of perennials so that they then develop the job skills and my customers can feel good about, like you're saying, these sort of more frivolous, you know, expenses perhaps of gardening.
I'm getting myself in trouble with my friends who are in the business, obviously, and I don't care anymore because I'm getting old and cranky. And my feeling is, how do you bring the two together? You know, I go to these sites and I see community gardens like you've got here, and they're raising food and it's really great. Yeah. And then there's my friends, the designers, who are working with perennials. Many of them are not native, as I said before, and dealing with picky clients. And it doesn't have anything to, the two don't really have anything to do with each other. And in a weird way, you've brought them together at least a little bit.
Yeah, I feel that here I don't really feel much disconnect, because one of the things we're also wanting to teach the kids is entrepreneurialism. And we feel that if we can sort of like, rather than giving somebody a fish, we want to teach them to fish. And rather than giving somebody money, we want to teach them how to make money and how to have their own business, perhaps. And so we feel that that all these things are unified in that element of in that method of entrepreneurialism, whether it's growing food or growing perennials. I feel like everybody has their own niche. And for me, I remember I grew up on a farm in northeastern Ohio, and I remember coming to Chicago thinking, I want to grow food because whatever I plant, I want it to have some real practical value. But I just found that growing food was a lot of work. And and so it doesn't always...
Well, growing perennials isn't. It's like you just slam them in and say, sayonara.
But the difference is I feel like I could maybe justify the perennials from an economical point of view, that if I pay you know, $1.25 or $1.25, and I can sell the plant for $6 or $8 or whatever, maybe there's some, I mean, this is to your point, this has become a lot of work as well.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of work I love. And honestly, for me, I think that beauty seems to motivate me more than function. And I think that's sort of.
You got to get over that, dude.
Yeah.
You have to get past that.
Well, I think the bottom line is that at the core, I'm sort of an artist. I'm an artist. And
you're an effete snob, is what you are. You're a plant snob.
Yes, I'm a plant snob. And I just love these plants I've been taught. And I'm just so grateful to Roy Diblick for teaching me all these wonderful perennials that...
Oh, he's overrated.
So, and I just share his passion for plants, yeah. And I just feel grateful for this opportunity to get to see them grow. And I've always been envious of Roy getting to grow his own perennials. And here I found my little piece of, you know, heaven or whatever that I get to go to when it's, you know, when I have those free moments.
Yeah, well, you're still like 16 years old, so, you know, you got plenty of time to do all this.
I hope so. So this is our rainwater collection cistern, where we're basically taking the rainwater that's coming off the roof, putting it into this tank. I think this is several thousand gallons. 3,000, maybe?
You think it's that big? I'm thinking more 500 gallons, maybe. I don't know. Who would know? Who's going to know?
Michael Rule would know. He was the one who designed this. He has a company called Greenheart Buildings.
Uh-huh.
And so he developed this rainwater collection system, which then irrigates the planters. And so this cistern is galvanized steel. And right now, actually, if you feel it, it's cold. So I think we've got some water in there from last night.
Last night was a good storm.
And then basically...
And this feeds, you said it feeds the...
It irrigates the planters.
The planters, and you're talking about more galvanized, the troughs around the corner?
Those galvanized steel troughs.
And they're raised.
Yeah.
So how do you get the water pressure to get the...
Well, there's a lot of water pressure on here already.
So it's all gravity.
Yeah, it's gravity fed, yeah. And we have a little timer down there where we just turn it to basically 120 minutes, and we have drip irrigation that basically waters the planters.
Mm-hmm.
And then those six planters, they're closest to the street, have they're set up to be bottom watering as well.
Yeah.
So similar to the earth box idea where the water's going to be wicking up from the bottom of the planters. Those ones were planted later in the season, so haven't been
the ones right here.
Yeah, exactly.
I was noticing the tomatoes are a little small at the moment.
Yeah, so those were the last ones to be installed, so that's why they basically all got a late start. And so we're planning next year to basically just redo it all, and hopefully they'll be looking better.
Well, okay, let's talk about this area here. You've got... you're on the side of the building of the...
This was an armory. At one
was
point,
it?
Yeah.
And how long has the reuse operation been here?
They've been here about a year, I think.
So you obviously quickly set up an agreement with them to work together.
Yeah, well, they the Reuse Depot has been really supportive of the community, and they want to basically give back to the community, and they thought this would be a good way for them to give back to the village of Maywood. And so the owners are very supportive of our efforts. And then at one point, they were actually out here building things with us. But what happened is their business has picked up so significantly that they've had to take more of a backseat and really just have let us do what we need to do, what we need and want to do for the benefit of the kids and the community and the garden.
Speaking of homegrown, I mentioned that there was some homegrown salsa at the Giving Garden. Let's get a taste.
My name is Sienna.
And you are?
I'm Alexandra.
And you guys are showing me the salsas that you've got on display. I've just tasted both of them. You got the green salsa and the red.
Uh-huh.
All right, what's the difference between them?
Well, this one is a little bit. We added more ingredients to this, so the green one.
The green.
Yes, the green one, which is the sauce, the green tomato salsa. It's more complex than the red one. We added more things, more fibers. We had added garlic, lime. As of the red one, which is the salsa rojo, we just put simple stuff, nothing but red tomatoes, jalapenos, and onions.
It all came out of the garden, right?
Do you like some lemonade?
Oh, you got a little lemonade there?
Yes, sir. Yes, this all came out of the garden. We harvested it last week.
Oh, just last week?
Yep, yeah. Just last week.
I did grow the tomatoes and the...
Yes.
Yes.
Everything else. Everything.
Tomatillos.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And everything that went into the salsa.
Oh, we didn't?
We didn't grow the chips. Not the chips. Of course not.
The chips did not come out of here.
Right, of course not.
Great. Did both of you help and make the salsa, or was that somebody else?
We actually
It was one of our coaches. Her name is Mercedes.
And
she was nice enough to make our salsa.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She always makes stuff like this, and it's very delicious.
That's a huge batch of salsa there.
Yes.
We knew we were going to have, a lot of people coming to check out what we do for our spare time. And
yeah.
We wanted to make sure that we didn't have too little or too much, just enough.
Well, and you've got, salsa keeps real easy, so you mm-hmm. can take it home with you.
Uh-huh. Yes.
All right, well, thank you guys.
You are so welcome.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
In a city where pity runs low, you can't grow food in a loft, an apartment, or a condo. So now you work for the dollar and man when all you needed was sun, air, the water, and land. They think they own.
Back to the Mike Novak Show and my look at suburban food insecurity and how to overcome it, courtesy of Proviso Partners for Health.
I'm Jennifer from Grow You Organic. I'm a garden coach, and I teach people how to grow their own fresh organic food. And in their own home garden, a lot of times people think because we live in the Midwest, they aren't quite sure what they can grow. And I love teaching people, specifically these kids, all amazing things, specifically like okra. And what's great about it is not only is the okra that you get edible, but the flower is too. So just teach.
And it's a beautiful plant.
And it's absolutely gorgeous. And this flower is absolutely gorgeous. Can you imagine if you cater food and you decorate, you can also eat this flower as well. So just letting people know.
A lot of people rather eat the flower than the fruit that comes out of it.
Exactly. And it's gorgeous. Also, you can decorate with that. So.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a trend too now, putting your edibles in with your ornamentals.
Exactly. And just letting people know how simple it really is and that you don't have to live in a special part of the country, that you can also grow amazing things right here in the Midwest.
This is another trendy thing, these galvanized horse troughs.
Yep.
Used as raised beds.
Yep.
How well do they work? What do you like? What do you don't like about it?
So this is what I do like about it. I like that it's raised. It's off the ground. If you have a problem with animals, specifically rabbits that might get into a smaller bed, you won't have that problem with these raised ones. Uh-huh. One of my initial concerns is that in the summertime when it heats up, it would be too hot. And especially since I work a lot of times with kids, but you can touch this and it's not too hot. So initially, my concern was that it would be too warm, but it's not. It's doable.
It's got a little bit of warmth.
It's a little bit of warmth, and today is a really hot day, but it's
still okay. And what is this material?
I'm not quite sure. I think it's a galvanized steel.
Anybody? We got to find out exactly what that.
Yeah, let me find out. Nathan, do you know what material this is specifically?
What's that?
The raised bed.
Oh, it's galvanized steel.
Oh, it is galvanized steel. Okay, I just took a wild guess with that.
Very good. Good answer. Good wild guess.
Yep.
All right, so now we got some peppers here, but you've also got marigolds in there.
Yeah, so and lots of peppers and marigolds.
And some petunias. I mean, you're doing, and I see beans over there, and we have the okra over there.
String beans.
Love string beans.
Yep. Yep, lots of string beans, and the kids learn to actually harvest the string beans and pick them for people.
You know, and I hope one of the things they're learning is how good that tastes if you cook it today. You know, you steam it a little bit, and then you realize that it's not like a frozen
vegetable. It cooks a lot better. The taste is delicious. A perfect example of that is that salsa verde that we are having today. That actually came, all ingredients came from our garden. So we harvested fresh yesterday, and we made that salsa verde, and it's being served today. And everybody's talking about how delicious it tastes. And part of that is that it was just picked fresh from the garden. All of our ingredients came from this garden right here, and we made it fresh. It's simple, it's fresh, and
are those collards over there?
Yes, they are collard greens. Yum, yum.
Yeah, this looks a lot like my community garden. You got a lot of the same stuff. You got the collards, you got the tomatoes, you got the pepper.
Lots of things that people like to eat, and a lot of the things that the students also helped in the planning of things that they like to eat and that their families like to eat. Because one of the things about a garden is if you're going to grow in it, it should be things that you're going to actually eat. So, you know, a lot of times
I'll give you a perfect example. Okra might be one of them. Eggplant is another. I'll tell you the thing about eggplant. What a beautiful plant.
Yeah.
I'm not so much of a fan of eggplant dishes, but I love to grow eggplant because it looks great.
It looks great. It's gorgeous. It's pretty. But a lot of times you can't eat it fast enough, right? So one of the things that they chose to do in this garden is to plant things that they knew that they would use readily, their families would use, or that they would use, which was great.
Yeah. All right. What do we got over here?
So over here we have lots of amazing herbs. So it's just like you said.
This is the herb bed.
This
huh?
is one of the herb beds. And we planted all different types, specifically lemon verbena, multiple different types of the mints, the rosemaries, our own fresh chamomile to make our own teas.
Okay. Let me ask you a question about that. Rosemary likes it usually a little drier, but you've got it mixed in with the basil, but you have doesn't look like it's having any problems.
Nope, it is growing fantastic, and that's one of the good things about this galvanized steel. Because it does warm up just a bit, it keeps it just dry enough for the herbs. And so as you can see, the herbs are doing fantastic in this bed, and we were able to mix and match them.
I was wondering, is this
tomatillo?
Tomatillo. That's what that's right, because of the size. We've got in our yard volunteers. Man, these things will come back the next year.
Yep.
They'll be all over the place.
They will be. Yep. And so we harvested a lot of the larger ones yesterday for our salsa.
Yep. That's right. You mentioned, so that's what's in the salsa here.
Yeah, so we use a lot of these herbs. We do lots of different things with the herbs that most people don't know about. We make our own natural hair rinses with the herbs. We make our own teas with the fresh chamomile. You can also make a nice tea with the lemon verbena. You can put some of your mint leaves and make a nice cool drink. Mint leaves and cucumbers and make a nice water, cucumber mint water. So we use a lot of our herbs in non-traditional ways.
So how is it you got involved with all of this here?
You know what? I've always loved plants, nature, and people. And I've always kind of in that order, right? right. And I've always kind of had a green thumb. And then one time I had an opportunity through one of the park districts to work with their youth and teach them how to grow and plant. And it was successful, and the youth loved it, and I loved it. And so I've been coming back every year.
But this is new. I mean, this is basically first year here.
First year here, but we've always had programs here in Maywood. There was a Green Corps, and then there was an Urban Garden Connection, which was this huge community garden movement that started in Maywood and Broadview. So it is the first year for this garden here in connection with the high school, Proviso East. But we've been here in the green kind of growing movement has been here in Maywood for a little while now. This is about the fourth or fifth year. And it just continues to grow and grow because there's such a strong interest in the western suburbs. And one of the problems I found is that there's a lot of stuff for people to do in the city. But then as soon as you hit like the beginning of the western suburbs and back, it just kind of fell off. So, and there's a strong interest. So now
it's really taken off. I think that some folks in the city think, well, in the burbs, they've got all that land, they got all that area, they'll take care of themselves, and the stuff grows wild. It grows automatically, but you got to have community here, too.
You do, yeah. And it's been a great success here, actually, in the western suburbs. Yeah, it's been quite fantastic, and people are really interested in learning how simple it is to grow things and how they can take control and grow it in their own backyard or in a community garden.
I think that's a really important point, which is, it's really simple.
It's basically simple.
It's a little soil, it's some water and some sun and seeds and go.
Yep, and pretty much go. And, you know, including your neighbors as well, you know. And then also it's great just to have the resources through the Park District. If you aren't quite sure, you have Master Gardener groups, groups that can help you at your local Park District that can also kind of guide you if you're new to gardening. Just don't be afraid. Just get out there and try it.
You're a student at Triton, right?
Yes, my name is Bill Greer. I'm a student in the Sustainable Agricultural Technology program.
I love Triton. How long have you been studying there
now?
It's
my second year.
All right. Now, you're not a young pup, okay?
No, far from it. So
what got you involved?
Well, I've been gardening for about 25 years, and I noticed the phases we went through, natural labels and the organic labels. And I started seeing a correlation between that and the foods that we have, the GMOs, the foods that are altered, and how it's not healthy for us and how we need to get back to giving back to the soil instead of, I call it rip farming, where you just go in and just tear it up, plant 20,000 acres of soybeans, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Every year you have to amend it with synthetic fertilizers. It's just not working out.
So what's your involvement with the garden here?
I am actually built the raised beds.
Did you?
Yeah.
Let's wander over there.
Okay.
Those are very nice.
They were designed for square foot gardening, which give you a maximum amount of space to garden.
I've had Mel Bartholomew on my show before.
Yes.
You know, there are many ways you can do the square foot, but I can see you actually have the strings here.
Right, we have them marked off at 1 foot per bed. So it's more efficient to teach the kids this way than to just willy-nilly all over the place, just throw seeds down and
Even in rows, because that's, you know, that's the thing that Mel rails against in his books, which is we're wasting a lot of space in between rows because that's the way farmers have traditionally done it.
Right. There's a 2/3 to 1/3 ratio for actual plants and actual area for you to walk down, and it's just a big waste that way.
Yeah. And so how many beds have we got here?
We've got 18 beds.
Wow. And it looks like they were just finished.
Yes, they were finished a week ago.
So, okay. Let's set the scene here because this is audio, and it's August.
Okay.
It's hot. You've got these beds here that look like they should have been ready in April. What are you going to plant in them now in August?
Oh, we're going to do roots, or what they call root vegetables, which will survive in a colder temperature than your summer vegetables. So it'll be the cabbages, the lettuces, the radishes,
beets,
some corns. Carrots.
Not corn.
Not corn.
No, a little late for that.
Yeah.
But and I noticed that the hoop and these beds are all under a big hoop frame.
Yes.
When does the fabric come on?
The fabric is going to come in a few weeks. We still got a design area where we're going to raise it to ventilate it and to adjust the heat level in it. And that has to be done. That's a little technical for us to just come in and, and throw up. So that's got to be designed and then put in.
All right, this maybe isn't your area of expertise, but you're going to put in a hoop and you're going to have it the weather controlled under it. But this is right next to the street. Does it seem a little vulnerable to you?
I believe that if people need to have food and, you know, if you need to...
They'll come in and they'll take what they need to take.
Right. And yeah. And that's
we've had that issue in our community garden in the city, okay?
Yeah.
And our philosophy has always been, well, somebody really needs it, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
When we really get a little upset is when they pull green pumpkins because there's nothing you can do with that.
Right, exactly. So if someone doesn't have enough food, then they can take what they need as long as it just doesn't get into vandalism and just total devastation, like you say, of food that's not even ripe or just taking it just because it's there.
Yeah,
we have to go on an honor system with something somewhere.
And I'm totally with you there. It's like at some point you just shrug and you say it's in the city here, you in the near suburbs, near west suburbs. It's out in the open. It's vulnerable. Hey, look, we're growing food. Do you really need to have it? Okay, take something and put it on your plate. Don't just be destructive.
Right. And my thing about it is I'm with the belief that we're generations away from feeding our children fresh vegetables, nutritious vegetables. We're into this fast food era and age, and that's what they go by. And I believe that every garden should be in someone's yard. Everyone should have a garden in their yard. That's the way it used to be. That's the way I was raised. And that's what I look at trying to do. And
where were you raised?
I was raised in Chicago, 55th and Union, 61st and Morgan, in that area.
So you guys had gardens in your backyards all the time?
Yeah, yeah. Cucumbers, cabbages. It was there. My grandparents always garden every year.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought you were going to say, oh, I had this rural, you know, a lot of people say I grew up in the South and blah, blah. No, you were in the south of Chicago.
Right? Yeah, and we always, no matter where we live, we always had a garden going.
Yeah.
So that's the way I was raised. And we like I say, we've gotten so far away from that with the fast food and how quickly you can just drive up and get it and take it home. And then we run into issues of type 2 diabetes now in kids, not just older people or middle-aged people, but kids now. And we got to start turning that around, and it's going to take a while to do it, and that's what we need to do.
I guarantee if your diet is beets and carrots and greens, you're not going to have type 2 diabetes.
No, I agree with that 100%. And there are a lot of people that want to debate that, and I'm not here to debate issues about it. I just know that if you eat healthy, your body's going to be healthy. So if you eat junk, you're going to wind up having junk. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Same here.
And congratulations and much luck to you here.
We are getting there.
You are.
We are getting there.
Captain's log, Stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Sound red alert. Shields up. Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe? Author of my favorite children's stories.
Captain, I am attempting to access a copy of the masterpiece. It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. Aroundtheblockpress.com. Yes, Mr. Wong.
Yes, Captain. Aroundtheblockpress.com.
How many times can I say it?
Get a copy today of Attack of the Killer Asparagus at aroundtheblockpress.com. I highly recommend it. Now, did you know that fall is the best time to work on your lawn? Lawns do better with some nourishment over the colder months, like Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer. Best of all, it's goof-proof. Milorganite applied in fall will help your lawn green up faster next spring and help it recover quickly from winter damage. Proper fertilization will improve your lawn's overall health and reduce weed problems. Give your lawn the food it needs, Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Some folks save money, I save seeds. I don't water my lawn or spray weeds. The money I do spend on watering crops, I get right back because I don't shop for groceries. I got breakfast.
It's the Mike Novak Show, and my visit to the Raise the Hoop Garden Festival in Maywood, Illinois. I chatted with a couple of the people who helped put together and plant the garden beds for Proviso Partners for Health.
I am Lena Hatchett, and I'm at Loyola University Medical Center, and I'm the Director of University and Community Partnerships there. And for the Proviso Partners for Health, which is the organization that sponsors this garden, I'm the director. The nickname is the PP4H, and we're a health coalition that is promoting health equity within the communities in Proviso. And health equity is about not just waiting till somebody gets sick and then taking them to the doctor, but how can we prevent and prevent disease and promote wellness, particularly reducing obesity among our children. What we're doing, our special brand of reducing obesity, is to promote and increase fitness, increase the demand for fitness, and increase the access for fitness, and increase the demand for healthy food, and increase the access to healthy food.
And you start with this garden,
yep,
which is located on the grounds of
the Reuse Depot, which is an entrepreneurial business.
You know, it's interesting because yesterday I was at the Rebuilding Exchange.
Oh, yes.
In Chicago.
Yes.
And I didn't expect to find this connection, you
yes.
know, because here you are on the grounds of a similar
yes.
organization here in Maywood.
Yeah, so the connection for us is very, very realistic, and it gets back to my point about health equity. Now, if our community had access to jobs and decent housing and important education, they could go and get jobs, get in their own cars with their own salaries, and go and buy groceries and open up their own stores, and we wouldn't have a lack of access to food.
Mm-hmm.
So when we use food and sustainable agriculture, it's not just to hand out food, it's to build the economic development of this community so that people can become entrepreneurs, have their own businesses, and revitalize the community. And Reuse Depot is doing that with materials.
Mm-hmm.
And this is reclaimed wood right here. And it's a way to circulate dollars back into the community. And so they were interested.
And at the same time, be good to the planet and
good
to the people on the planet, good to the resources on the planet.
We are better to our plants than we are to our people. And Proviso Partners for Health is changing that and being a part of health equity, where we value our people and our plants.
All right, but you know, you don't strike me as a naive woman, okay?
No.
All right, you know how hard this is. We've got a few people here today, and it's great to have the turnout, but that's a small number compared to the folks who really need to benefit from the kind of work you're doing here. How do you increase those numbers?
Well, this is our first project. We've been doing this since 2006, and we started with a farmer's market. And it's about increasing demand and awareness so that people know, why is it that this community doesn't have access for food, right? Not just giving people food and giving them nutrition education, but getting to the root causes, the social determinants of poor health. People need jobs, right? And what are the barriers to jobs? Well, empowerment, entrepreneurship, political savvy. And our project is about
that. And a lot of that comes from knowledge. Like the knowledge you impart when you teach people how to grow their own food.
Right. And what a lot of programs do is they stop at the knowledge. So they are a training and an education program. So voila, I've trained you for 6 months or 3 months. Bye-bye, and let me train the next group of people. But we are sustainable with our youth and with our partners. Proviso Partners for Health isn't going anywhere. So when we talk about getting people here, we have people here. Come to our next quarterly meeting where we have 50 people who are all supporting this this mission. And they all run organizations serving people. And we had a village Pride Day where we cleaned up the community. We have 500 people picking up trash, cleaning up debris because they care about.
Come to my neighborhood, please, and do that, would you, in Chicago?
Well, I feel like we do have a mechanism. One, we've been doing it for a long time, so when we start, you don't get 500 people. But over years, they see our commitment and our real dedication to the community, and they model it. So I'm giving, Nathan is giving, all the organizations are giving, and guess what? When the other partners come along, they give too. I've got a woman coming here with a bumper crop of peaches just because. Now, she could sell that and make a ton at a farmer's market up the road, but she prefers to give it to us to donate to the community, and that's one thing that we are very, very good at.
I've talked to other folks here today already, and I think there's a misconception that because you're in the suburbs, it's all going to come a lot easier in that people will instantly have access to everything they need. What's wrong with that statement?
Oh, well, there's everything. The idea and the concept of the suburbs is so different now. We have a suburban poverty challenge, and when we have poverty in the suburbs, it's more of a problem than in Chicago because we don't have a transportation system. So we have a few buses here. They don't run in the direction from people's homes to where people can work, from people's homes to where they can be educated. So people are isolated when they live in the suburbs and they have no income. They can't get on a car, they can't get on a bus, and they don't have funds to take a cab to get to work or education or access jobs. So a lot of funding doesn't come to the suburbs because they're focused on the needs in the city, but poverty is shifting and the whole dynamic has changed. So we get overlooked by organizations and the perception that there's some need. Now, we have the same challenges as a city, an urban community, but we just happen to be 9 miles away from those boundaries.
Well, let me just say, as an observer and as a person who lives in the city of Chicago, this neighborhood doesn't look any different from my neighborhood in Chicago, really. It's pretty much the same thing. There might be, you know, you've got the forest preserve.
Where do you live?
Logan Square.
Okay, well, so Logan Square is pretty middle income, wouldn't you say?
Not my part of it. I'll go toe-to-toe with you about my neighborhood because mine's pretty low income.
Well, and I haven't spent much time in Logan Square. But
it is a fancy neighborhood. You know, if you see... A friend of ours said, oh, I hear about your neighborhood all the time on HGTV because everybody wants to move there. Well, I had two people shot on my street this summer, okay?
Yeah. So we can show you the places where people are shot. And this community, we have high level of poverty, but it's not in every block. You can look block by block. Not only look at the crime rate, but look at the poverty rate block by block. And we have high-income people. We have faculty and doctors that work at Loyola who live in the community, too. So block by block, there are differences. Crime are block by block differences. We have high foreclosure rates. So I don't think that we're any worse here than an urban neighborhood, but we're overlooked to a greater extent because of our suburban address. Our schools have a lower graduation rate and those kinds of things. Those are our problems, and the opposite of the problem is not necessarily the solution. So we are focused on empowerment, looking at community assets to rebuild this community, and we're not really comparing ourselves to what other communities have.
Right. I don't want to get this into a competition. Yeah. What I guess I'm trying to illustrate is there's a gap in knowledge of what a community like this has to deal with in comparison to not only the city, but suburbs farther out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And income levels are more equivalent to what's going on in the city.
And the statistics are challenging. The way we look at population is we take an average. So when you look at an average of suburban Cook County, which we represent, you don't have a low income problem, but then you have pockets of deep health disparities in African-American communities. Even Latino communities have more access to food than African-American communities. Why is that? Right?
I notice that in Latino communities are always stores where you can get fresh vegetables.
Right.
Always.
Right. right? And the income level doesn't correspond to it.
I live in one of those communities, by the way, right. And that's how I know.
So our approach, right, is not to just look at the surface of these problems, is go to the deep root of those problems and tackle those. So our kids understand, why is it that African-American communities don't have access to food? And how can I, myself, at 15, at 14, at 12, be a part of the change and not just the statistics of when I grow up and I have my own kids that they don't have access here.
Talking to Lena Hatchett at the Giving Garden in Maywood. It's a celebration on a very hot August day, but it's looking to the future and how everybody can get involved. And that was my next question is, you can bring students out here. Do you and teach them things? As you said, knowledge is just one step along the way. How do you keep the fire burning?
Right. The response to that is, how do I keep the fire burning? That's not my job. We inspire and empower the kids to be leaders so they keep their own fires burning. When you think about what motivates you to act in your own life, it may be that you're doing something for a purpose. And our kids are just the same. They see the purpose and the value of the work in the garden, and that's what keeps them coming. It's that internal motivation. It's not my job. And just the things that motivate and propel me as a PhD at Loyola is the same things that would that will inspire and motivate our youth. They need a purpose. They need responsibility. They need to be held accountable, and they self-motivate. It's a very clear story. There's no food here, and we're growing food, and we're giving it to people, and we're going to sell it, and we're going to make a profit. That's a pretty simple story that they understand, they get it, and they got it in about 2 weeks. That's how they came up with their mission of philanthropist, right? So, you know,
which Nathan told me about. I love that name.
Yes, they did. They designed it. They named themselves
philanthropist.
And
nobody can say it.
Nobody can say it. The kids can say it very well, but they have their mission because they get it. And sometimes I think with health promotion, the problem is so big. We try to find very complicated solutions, but it's very, very simple. Mm-hmm. Our kids need a goal and a purpose to make it worthwhile. And you can talk to any one of them, and they will show you and tell you their own motivation has little to do with me. Mm-hmm. We said it, we built it together with them, and they're going to sustain it.
You said something earlier about food here. Is it tough to find fresh, organic vegetables in Maywood?
Yeah. It depends on who you talk to because it's contextual. So if you have a car and you have an income level, it's not tough. You can go anywhere you want, 2 miles away in Oak Park, and get exactly what you want, as much as you want, when you want it. If you don't have those resources, it's very, very tough. For our program, we run a soup kitchen on Tuesday nights. Tuesday once a month, I have to prepare the food. I went to the store. I wanted mushrooms, spinach, fresh carrots for a pasta sauce. The store had none. The shelves were bare of spinach. They had some old carrots that I didn't choose to buy, but I was able to get the mushrooms. And there were only a small amount of mushrooms. I can't find milk for the soup kitchen on Tuesday nights once a month. I asked the guy, it's Tuesday. He said the milk comes in on Friday. And so it depends.
That's unheard of.
Unheard of.
Unheard of, even in most parts of, or many parts of the city, certainly the suburbs, it's unheard of.
So, but I don't live here, so I'm not shopping every day, and I'm still getting in my car, and I'm still using my income that, you know, the percentage of that milk cost, I don't question. I grab the milk.
Right.
Right. So I bet you could ask every guest here, and they'd tell you something different. So we don't want a blanket statement, the idea of access to food.
Right.
We know, for me, from my perspective at Loyola, the school is not providing enough fresh fruits and vegetables, but many schools are not providing enough fresh fruits and vegetables. I want it easily accessible so kids can have vegetables every day. I want it in the daycare centers. I want it at Loyola at an affordable price.
You're talking about the university, you say it's,
at Proviso East.
Okay,
yeah.
Proviso East, there's a difference. At Loyola, you can get it.
Well, my point is, even at Loyola, we have it, but it's not affordable for all the staff. You have to look at what salaries the staff at Loyola get. It's affordable for me, right?
Yeah.
I'm at the high end of the spectrum. But what about the janitor who has to work long hours? Can he eat in our cafeteria? We have new menu with fresh fruits and vegetables and stations and organic and all know that. That's very, it's about 3/4 more than it used to be when they were selling garbage. So, so when you don't want to just blanket statement that access and affordability, and that's where we go wrong, because then we think, okay, this is the problem and this is the solution. So we make sure to
talk to them. It's much more nuanced than that.
And we make sure to involve the community in asking those questions, because things change, and if we're not changing with it, that's when you lose people.
Yeah.
So I think access is certainly not the same as in my community, but I can give you 5 people who will have 5 different answers, and we're focused on the solution, not so much the problem.
Lena, it's a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. Thank you, and congratulations on this and continued success.
Oh, it's the complexity of the story, because I think, okay, we think access, no access, build a store. Well, we've had a grocery store here, not a small store, a mid-size, high-quality grocery store. It lasted 18 months. 18 months, brand new from the ground up, cost millions of dollars of TIF funds, and it died.
Oh,
so, you know, when we think about food access, we're like, bring a grocery store, hire local people to work in it, and our problems are solved. It was not sustainable. Our farmer's market died. It was not sustainable. Times have changed. Marketing about sustainable agriculture has increased nationally with the Let's Move movement. That helps build awareness locally. Our population is declining. So people are moving away as poverty increases. People are moving to Iowa and all kinds of different things, that suburban poverty shift. So it's not just so simple as bring in some food, start a farmer's market, or create this grocery store. Nobody expected that to fail. And our market lasted longer than the grocery store. So it's just complicated, and we need to understand that. And if we're trying to promote food access, silver bullets don't cure things. And that's what we try to address, the nuances in the Proviso Partners for Health, so that we can actually create sustainable solutions.
I'm not done yet.
Well, I am. That's all she wrote, folks. Thanks for listening. All I can say is go green or go home.
You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.